Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
That's right. It's his official theme song. It is time to be joined by Maryland Governor Larry Hogan, who is now in the midst of his first term in office. I mean, really, the halfway point of his first term in office is here upon us. Governor, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Good morning. I love the theme song.
Yeah, well, you know, it's required. It's in your contract, I think, when you're on. We have to play.
Your people send a writer.
I think that's the only thing that's in my contract.
So, listen, it really is sort of an interesting time. Your first year, four-year term, you're halfway through. It's that moment where you have a chance to look at what you've accomplished in the first 2 years and look ahead to what you're about to accomplish in the remaining 2 years of your first term.
Yeah.
So where are we? What do you think you've accomplished, and what is there still to do?
Well, first of all, everybody's kind of jumping the gun because even though the election was 2 years ago, I didn't get sworn until the end of January. So yeah. I still have two more months before I hit the midway point, guys. So I still got a lot more to do. We've done a lot. You know, we've still got more to do, but I'm really pleased with the progress we've made so far. The thing that I've been focused on, as you both know from back during the campaign, was turning our economy around and putting people back to work. And, you know, we've cut taxes by $700 million. We cut tolls by $270 million at every facility the first time in 50 years. We've cut 255 fees. We've been cutting regulations all across state government. And we've really started to turn our economy around. We've gone from last place in the Mid-Atlantic region in job creation to first place in the Mid-Atlantic region in job creation.
Wow, that's amazing.
In manufacturing jobs, where we were just getting killed for 8 years, we lost 25,000 jobs. We have now turned it around where we created more manufacturing jobs in Maryland than the entire region put together. In March, we went to number one in the nation in private sector job growth. And our state economy, when I ran for governor, ranked 49th out of 50 states, and we're now number 11, which is the greatest economic improvement of anybody in the United States of America.
That's an impressive statistic.
You just don't read about it much in the Post or the Sun. It's an exclusive for the Brian and Larry show. You're the only ones that get to hear about it.
All right.
We'll make sure we spread it far and wide. Governor Hogan, one of the things that we liked about you going in as the governor of Maryland is that you had never held elective office before. We often think that a government needs to be approached the way a businessman would approach a business. And I don't know if you've noticed, but there hypothetically is another man who's never run for office who is from the business world who's going to be assuming a lot of responsibility.
I heard something about that.
I wonder if you're looking back, what was the biggest challenge coming from that business world and having to deal with an entrenched government bureaucracy like we have in Annapolis?
Well, it's still the challenge, you know, and we're up against kind of fighting the status quo and the career politicians and the people that don't want to see anything change, but the voters definitely wanted to see a change, and it's kind of our constant battle, but we've been able to make all that progress because we've been able to cut through some of it. And it wasn't just me as a business guy who had never held elective office, but the very first thing I did was bring in all new leadership in state government. Most of our cabinet secretaries and the leaders of our agencies are private sector, you know, business guys with real world experience that understand, you know, how to get things done, how to run things more efficiently and more cost effectively, and they're really challenging the status quo. But the frustration is that you can't get things done as quickly and that there's all kinds of obstacles and roadblocks. But we've been, you know, I think one of the things people are saying is, like, you know, the people are happy that we actually are getting things done. And I think it's one of the reasons why people are pleased with the progress we've made.
Yeah, results speak volumes.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about the Metro. Because,
oh, yes.
Metro Board Chair Jack Evans says, Governor, that you don't care about Metro.
Yeah, because, you know, what would you care about voters here in Montgomery County, Prince George's County? Yeah. They're not going to vote for you anyway.
Would you like to have a word or two for Jack Evans on that?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I'm not sure. I think Jack must have been drinking heavily that day or maybe smoking something funny. He was absolutely... completely, it was the opposite of the truth. I mean, I don't know even where he came up with that. You know, we've shown tremendous commitment, not only to Metro, where we put nearly $500 million a year in, but with our transportation budget and with all of the spending in state government, about half of the spending goes to Prince George's and Montgomery County. So he was accurate in saying that I did not win Montgomery and Prince George's. I also didn't win Baltimore City, but those are the three jurisdictions that get about 60-some percent of all the money, and the other 21 jurisdictions have to fight over the rest. So he was just wrong. We've been trying to hold him and the Metro Board accountable for their failures and their actions, and we're going to continue to do so. But for him to lash out and say that Governor McAuliffe and I don't give him what he wants, so that therefore we don't care, is just a mistake.
Well, there are some fine drinking establishments in Jack Evans's Ward 2 there, I have to say, but I have no idea. I've never seen him in any of those bars, and God knows I travel the...
That's testimony there. I mean, God knows you've been there.
Well, I'm usually there.
If Larry hasn't seen him in a bar...
Yeah, he's probably never been there.
I'm just there testing the crab cakes, as you can well imagine. But Governor Hogan...
Well, let me talk about that for a minute, if we can. Because, you know, one of the reasons why people are happy with what we're doing is they say we're doing exactly what we said we would do, and we've been delivering on our promises to put people to work, and, you know, we had our best year for businesses in 15 years, the best year for job growth, but one of my campaign promises is still unfulfilled, and it's been 20-some months now. We're not quite at the two-year point, as you guys said, but I want to finalize that, check that final one off the list, and we're trying to arrange to have you guys come down and broadcast live from Annapolis. And part of that will be to deliver on the promise to make Larry the honorary crab cake czar.
Well, I would be so honored as you can.
Just a second. I think that maybe you need to reconsider this idea because he already claims the title.
Well,
and he hasn't officially
he's
improperly been claiming this title now for 2 years.
Well, that might have to take that into consideration. Hold we on. Haven't done any betting.
Why are you getting in the way of my proclamation here, Wilson? I would appreciate that, Governor Hogan, because I really have felt a little bit like an imposter, but luckily the restaurants
make you legit
around the air. Well, yeah, good luck. Well, you and what army?
Yeah,
get calling the National Guard maybe from Maryland. Governor, it's always good to have you, sir.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you guys.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Gonna get my fez. I want a fez. I want a sash. I want the certificate.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
This is an honorable, decent, good human being that we're talking about. I can assure you that if there's wrongdoing out there, whether it's on the streets or whether it's in the police department, no matter where it is, Senator Jeff Sessions is going to find it and bring justice to whoever justice needs to be brought to.
That's Reince Priebus this weekend talking about the man that President-elect Trump has chosen to be his attorney general, Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, but the Democrats are aligning and they're getting ready for a fight, and they say it's going to be a tough confirmation battle. Joining us now on the line to talk about this and other stuff in the news, Joe DeGeneva, legal analyst, former U.S. attorney to the District of Columbia. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Just fine, thank you.
All right, so Jeff Sessions was a U.S. attorney in the Southern District of Alabama. I actually covered him as a reporter in Mobile for a while before I came to Washington, D.C. in 1986. And they're raising some stuff that was says 30 years ago when he was chosen by President Reagan to be a judge. That nomination later withdrawn because it got a little heated and controversial. What should we think about all this?
Well, I served with Jeff Sessions. I was U.S. Attorney at the same time. We were both members of an advisory group for the Attorney General. He was a really fine gentleman. He's been an even better United States Senator. He was actually the ultimate winner when he didn't get the judgeship because he got to be the Attorney General of Alabama, where he prosecuted the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan, got the death penalty for the leader of the Klan, which was in fact carried out. He also became, as U.S. Attorney, he instituted desegregation of some school systems as well as up other public facilities in Alabama. He was a fabulous U.S. Attorney. So these concerns about him are absurd. He has the votes to be confirmed. He will be confirmed, but what the Democrats are going to try and do is they're going to try and dirty him up. They're going to try and put pressure on him not to touch the Civil Rights Division, which must be done. The Civil Rights Division has become a political hackery place. We'll see how strong the Republicans are. I think he'll get through, though.
Well, but some of them could go wobbly, let's face it, when the usual and predictable chance of racism start getting mm-hmm. thrown around, they start to run for cover. So
yeah.
You just said the Civil Rights Division has become a mockery and it should be dismantled.
I didn't say it should be dismantled.
Oh, I'm sorry,
excuse me.
It
needs to be reformed.
It needs to be reformed. But Chuck Schumer laid that marker down yesterday. He says, well, if he wants dismantle the Civil Rights. So what is wrong with the Civil Rights Division right now, and will the Republican senators during their questioning be able to articulate that?
There's plenty wrong with it, mostly political decisions, not based on fact and law. But let me just say something, if I may, about this. You're absolutely right to see if Republicans get wobbly knees. Let me just say this about the Democrats. For more than 30 years, they were led by Robert Berg, who was the exalted Cyclops, that is, the leader of the Ku Klux Klan in West Virginia. Not one of them ever stood up on the floor of the Senate and objected to him being their leader. Let me repeat this. Robert Byrd was a member of the Klan. He joined so he could gain political favor in West Virginia. Neither Ted Kennedy, and more importantly, not Chuck Schumer, never said a word. Let me tell you what the Republicans should do. They should go on offense. They should accuse the Democrats of being hypocrites. They should talk about Robert Byrd. They should talk about his leadership of the Klan in West Virginia. And they should attack the Democrats in the Senate for never standing up and saying anything about it. Indeed, at the memorial service for Robert Byrd, dozens of Democrats got up and gave eulogies to him and praising him for his public service. And never once, except for Bill Clinton, who got up and mentioned that he was a member of the Klan, but he did it as a young man to get ahead in life.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't blame him for that. Yeah. He just saw it as a way to get ahead because he wanted to get votes from people.
This is a test of whether or not Republicans have cojones. They should throw this in the face of the Democrats.
And let's remember that those confirmation hearings in which all of this was ginned up, it was ginned up specifically by one Ted Kennedy, who I think at that very moment was developing his playbook that he would pull out later for the nominations of people like, Robert Bork to be a Supreme Court justice.
That is correct.
Absolutely.
That is correct. And it was the Democrats from the Robert Bork nomination on who changed American politics forever. It's their fault that we are where we are. And actually, though, we're at Trump time, and I think it's just grand.
Well, and we're post-Harry Reid doing away with the 60-vote rule on a lot of these nominations.
And let me just tell you something. If the Democrats oppose President Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court, I'm going to tell you something. Mitch McConnell will change the rule, and they will make it 51 for Supreme Court nominees. He is going to exercise the nuclear option.
Well, that was my next question for you, but since you've already answered that part of it, let's continue to focus on the Supreme Court justice nomination. It's very rare that a president going in assembles his cabinet, picks an attorney general, and needs to pick a Supreme Court justice nominee. If he picked up the phone and asked you, Joe, who would be a good choice, knowing the list that he's already put out there, where are you leaning right now?
I would vote for Ted Cruz. I would vote for Judge Pryor from the 11th Circuit, and I would vote for Mrs. Sykes from the 7th Circuit. There is a huge list, which he said he will choose from. He's already announced, I think there are 12 people on it, that he will choose from that list. It's a major commitment made by him during the campaign. The American people voted for him, so I assume he's going to pick from that list. The only one who wasn't on that list was Ted Cruz, but I think he met with Cruz in order to give him a handshake and to start the thing over again.
Yeah.
I mean, if he gave it to Cruz, I think it would be fabulous.
Really? And you think that he could get confirmed?
Oh, absolutely. absolutely. Did you do it just to get rid of him?
That's right.
That's exactly
what
right.
I hear. That's what I hear.
That's what a lot of people have said, and I think only half in jest, because he gets under their skin. He really does. Well, that'd be very interesting. What about the talk of Mitt Romney? Were you surprised, just from a political observer standpoint, that there would be this olive branch extended, and how serious is this?
This is the art of the deal in spades. This is unbelievable. This is vintage Trump, you know, and you know, I think it's very serious. I mean, it was Pence who said yesterday that Romney was under, as and I quote, active and serious consideration for Secretary of State. Now, you just don't say something like that. Now, that doesn't mean that Romney wants it or will do it. I can't imagine that he wouldn't want it. I mean, talk about saving a useless political life. Mm. He becomes Secretary of State. Just think, he could be the next Hillary Clinton.
Oh, God.
Hopefully he'll have better judgment with regard to his emails.
By the way, I think picking Romney would be brilliant.
Yeah, I do politically. Hey, 1 minute left here, and you actually broached another subject that I wanted to talk to you about. We're hearing that the Republicans in the House are interested in at least four different hearings continuing to investigate Hillary Clinton and her behavior. And we're already hearing this suggestion that Obama should pardon her and that the President-elect Trump and Republicans should be magnanimous in victory. Please talk to me about how critically important, especially because of the election results, how critically important that the Republicans continue down this road because of the philosophy of law and order and equal protection under the law.
Well, I think the key is the rule of law. Remember this phrase, rule of law. And the Obama administration abandoned the rule of law. The Justice Department became a political arm of the Democratic National Committee and the election campaign of Hillary Clinton. The Justice Department senior officials got in the way of grand jury investigations into the Clinton Foundation, and there needs to be a very serious investigation, not only by Congress, but by the new Justice Department team, as to why senior officials in the Justice Department leaked information to Hillary Clinton, made the strangest legal deals for immunity that have ever been made by the Justice Department. It needs to be, in other words, what I'm hearing from assistant U.S. attorneys all over the country with whom I have spoken, they want the investigation reopened, but they want an investigation of the investigation itself. That's why Comey can't stay.
That's right.
Why Comey has to go, and why Ray Kelly, the former police commissioner of New York, has to be the next FBI director.
And this is the main reason why Democrats don't want somebody as effective as Jeff Sessions to be the next attorney general.
I can assure you, every time they say Jeff Sessions, I'm going to say Robert Byrd.
Yep. All right. Thank you very much. Good to have you, Joe.
Okay,
always
guys.
Appreciate it.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
guys,
same. Yeah, absolutely.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Brian and Larry are in the house, and joining us on the line right now is Ed Gillespie, who wants to be the next governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Ed, good morning to you.
Good morning, Brian. Great to be with you.
Hey, listen, I just want to remind you of something that happened on election night. Listen to this. This is what happened on election night when they called the state of Virginia.
Tonight, we can say that Virginia will go to Hillary Clinton. Again, that Northern Virginia area where there are a lot of Democratic votes coming in late here, and now Hillary Clinton gets the state of Virginia, the Commonwealth, rather.
All right, so it is still a purple state, but it went to Hillary Clinton in the presidential election. However, it was a lot closer than anybody anticipated it might be. How will you find the right combination to win this state that has been so hard for Republicans to win?
Well, your point is a good one. You know, it was a lot closer than people expected. We have seen that pattern here in the Commonwealth, and I think it's time for national Republicans to understand that Virginia is a purple state, that it breaks late. I saw it, you know, my own experience in my Senate race, and I have a plan to do very well here in Northern Virginia. Obviously, I'm from Fairfax County and know the area very, very well, know our concerns. And as I did in my previous race where I carried Loudoun County, obviously, you know, you have to take your campaign everywhere. And I am going to be a governor for all Virginians. I will take my campaign to all Virginians. And, you know, in my Senate race, Brian, I had my campaign literature translated into seven different languages. And I'll do that again in the governor's race, and I understand the dynamics of Northern Virginia in a way that I think will help me do very, very well here, as well as, you know, run up numbers in Shenandoah Valley and Southwest Virginia, South Side, and other parts of the Commonwealth that tend to be a little more red.
Yeah. Ed Gillespie, Governor McAuliffe, of course, can't run for re-election, but his legacy will be on the ticket. I think if people are happy with how Governor McAuliffe has done, then whoever the Democrat nominee will be will have a better shot. So tell me, as the person who wants to be the Republican nominee, how has Governor McAuliffe failed Virginians?
Well, we've got real challenges here in terms of our economy. And if you look at the past 5 years, you know, last year our economic growth rate was 1.4%, which is anemic economic growth, and yet it was the first time in 5 years it was above 1%. The year before last, it was 0.2%, and we were 48th out of 50 states in economic growth in the bottom five, and that is just infuriating to me. The fact is, given our vast natural resources and our fertile lands, our ports, our people, our natural beauty, our historic landmarks, our location, when it comes to economic growth, Virginia should be in the top five of states, and we can be with the right policies, and it's time we made a lot of reforms here. We've got to adapt our economy. We've got to be less reliant on federal contracts in Northern Virginia, on military spending in Hampton Roads, and obviously coal in Southwest Virginia. We've talked about that for decades, Larry. Yeah. That time is now. It's upon us, and we have to have a plan, and if the next governor does not respond with a sense of urgency, we'll fail our fellow Virginians.
You know,
we deserve better than that.
Quick follow-up on that. We had Governor Larry Hogan yesterday on the show, basically the midway point of his tenure there as governor in his first term. And he gave us a laundry list of achievements that Maryland is in now in the top 10 of so many economic factors nationwide. Has the state north of the Potomac suddenly become more business-friendly than Virginia? Did you ever think you'd see this day, Ed Gillespie?
Well, I do know this. We have been dropping as a business-friendly state. And in fact, on the CNBC list, just 5 years ago, we were number one on that list in terms of best states to do business. And then we started to drop, and we have dropped consistently every year. Since last year, we dropped from number 12 to number 13. And, you know, that correlates with the fact that in 2013, the last year we've got numbers for, more people moved out of Virginia than into Virginia for the first time in decades. And that reflects that lack of opportunity. The lack of a dynamic economy here and the economic stagnation, that is a big contributing factor to our revenue shortfall in Richmond, $1.5 billion, not counting the explosion in Medicaid costs. And that's due to the fact that, you know, too many Virginians have left the workforce entirely. Too many Virginians are working part-time instead of full-time when they want to work a full-time job. And the worst thing is, you know, long term, for the past decade, we have been swapping out high paying jobs for lower paying jobs. And that's why the income tax revenues have fallen off. We've got to address these things. And I think Governor Hogan has taken an approach in Maryland that is a business friendly approach. And we have got to do more here to not only attract, you know, companies to move here. Governors from on both sides of the aisle have focused on that for some time, what some people call whale hunting. But we've got to foster natural organic growth and make it easier to open a new business and expand an existing one that's already here.
All right. So beyond jobs and growing business and trying to get the economy straightened out, what are the other big issues you see as facing the Commonwealth and that you would try to attack if you were the governor?
Well, transportation is a big one, obviously, in here in Northern Virginia. That you know, shows itself in the need for congestion relief. It also, we've got to address the concerns with Metro and Dulles as well. And so transportation is a big issue. In other regions of the Commonwealth, transportation issues are not, you know, so much about congestion relief as they are about economic lifeblood. And you can't get there from here. We need to link people up more. Education is a critically important issue. And you know, that we've got to tie that more closely into our workforce development needs. And that includes not only making sure that we're producing college graduates with the right degrees for the workforce of today and the future, but high school graduates as well. And we need to do more in terms of certification training in that regard. And healthcare is an issue. Clearly, our Medicaid, this $300 million unexpected increase in Medicaid spending, we've got to get our hands around that. And then the last thing I would say, Brian, is we do have an addiction crisis in the Commonwealth, and I see it everywhere I go. Opioid and heroin abuse. We had more Virginians die from opioid and heroin overdoses last year than from gunshot related incidents or auto related accidents or fatalities. And I'm actually glad to see this administration take steps on that yesterday in terms of the accessibility of naloxone. But there's much more we have to do to address this crisis.
Ed Gillespie, having a Republican in the White House would certainly help any Republican who gets the nomination in Virginia. I know you have a good relationship with incoming Chief of Staff Reince Priebus. How do you expect to work with the Trump White House when you're running for governor?
Well, very closely, hopefully as governor. And the fact is, as I just noted, you know, we have to diversify our economy and be less reliant on the federal government. But we are now. And we're also not just in terms of spending, federal spending, but the regulations that affect us. You look at Clean Power Plan and what it's going to do in coal country, which is already being devastated. We need to get more of our transportation funding back into Virginia. We're a big donor state, and yet we have huge transportation needs here. Obviously, we need to increase military spending for our national security purposes, but the Navy's been slashed over the past 8 years of the Obama administration, and that has a big impact in Hampton Roads. You know, we need to get the Department of Interior to lift that ban on development of our deep sea coast and allow for offshore drilling. And all of these things, I think having a Republican governor working with a Republican Secretary of the Interior, Republican Secretary of Transportation, a President Trump and a Vice President Pence would be helpful to the people of Virginia.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Ed Gillespie wants to be the next governor of Virginia. Thanks for joining us, Ed. Greatly appreciate it.
Great to be with you. Happy Thanksgiving to you all and all of your listeners.
Yeah, stuffing or dressing there, Ed Gillespie?
Stuffing.
There you go. That's my man. Hey, and don't forget, your campaign really took off against Mark Warner there in the later weeks when you were a regular guest here on WMAL. So, you know, check in as often as possible.
I will. And I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't urge folks to go to edforvirginia.com.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
All right, so yesterday up at Trump Tower, there was a big meeting between Donald Trump and key media people from the major networks, etc. I mean, network executives were in there. Some of the big star anchor talent was in the room. About 30 to 40 people sit down for a meeting with Donald Trump. And it's expected that there's going to be a discussion about, well, media access in the coming administration, blah, 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 all these things that press people care about right now. And, but it turned out to be something quite different, according to some reports. Because according to some, by the way, this is supposed to be an off-the-record meeting. Yeah. Isn't it interesting how you get an off-the-record meeting with a bunch of media people and you come out and you know exactly what happened in the room?
Yeah.
Wasn't so off-the-record, was it?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, apparently Donald Trump unloaded on these folks and just gave them a mindful. According to the New York Post, now I've heard some people have said this accounting is a little overblown, but according to the New York Post, it was like a firing squad. Trump started with CNN President Jeff Zucker, said, "I hate your network. Everyone at CNN is a liar, and you should be ashamed." Well, that's a nice way to start
well,
it off.
Now he stole my thunder. Yeah. That was what I was going
to
say.
He apparently, according to someone else who was anonymously quoted by the New York Post, Trump said, "We're in a room full of liars, the deceitful, dishonest media who got it all wrong." He called them dishonest, deceitful liars. He called out some correspondents, but not by name. We talked, for example, about an NBC reporter who had gotten it wrong, and I think he was referring to Katie Turr. He talked about an ABC correspondent who cried after Hillary lost, and I think he was referring there to ABC's Martha Raddatz, who was in the room, incidentally, at the time. So he went on and on and on, apparently he just gave them an earful. Apparently then there was an exchange of ideas. A few questions were asked and answered, and there were some assurances given about how they were going to allow coverage going forward in a Trump administration. But nonetheless, it was a pretty interesting meeting, according to many accounts that have been given. Donald Trump not pulling back, not pulling his punch, saying exactly what was on his mind. What would you say? I mean, I know when I talk to you that you are so angry about the way the media have handled this election. And if you had that opportunity, you're sitting in that room and you're looking down that long table and every one of those people you've wanted to give your mind to is sitting there in the room with you. What would you say? 888-630-9625, 1-888-630-WMAL. Well, it would be if I were Donald Trump, I can understand why he would be frustrated, because it seems to me that the media have not treated him fairly in this election. I completely get why he might want to, you know, air a few grievances. and I think it would be a very appropriate time to do that. Now, look, I'm wondering if with Donald Trump, once you clear the air, I sort of get this sense about the guy, once you clear the air, then perhaps you can move on. But it'll be interesting to see whether that happens or not. I certainly wouldn't have hesitated to express myself in no uncertain terms.
I think Donald Trump did the natural human thing, and it's totally understandable that he said, okay, you all want to discuss with me about, you know, access and about, you know, what the press pool is going to be like and what our plans will be like going forward. All right, let's all get into one room. We'll have that conversation. But first, I have a few things I'd like to get off my mind about what has transpired over the last several months. That's absolutely natural and human. You say that Trump seems to be the guy that you let it all out, and then afterwards you can move on and let bygones
be bygones. I'm beginning to wonder
about
that guy. I get that sense about.
I have no doubt that that is what that's what it's like in business. You know, you fight, you rip the person's face off, and then once you have your deal, you move forward as partners and you make it happen. I have no doubt that that's what he's like, and I know for sure that that's not what the media is like. Hmm. The media is not going to sit there, take what they took in the meeting yesterday, and then walk out and say, well, let's let bygones be bygones. Everything's reset now. We're going to start fresh. No way. And I think that basically what he's done is antagonize them even more, and I think that we're going to see a media going against this president like we've never, ever seen since Nixon, probably, maybe since Reagan. And we're going to be here to call them out on it. And I'm looking forward to it, frankly, because the media has now shown themselves to be who they really are. They don't hide anymore. But don't kid yourself. This is the beginning of a battle with the media, not the end of the last battle.
Well, to the phone lines we go. Pat in Annapolis, you're on with Brian and Larry. What would you say if you were sitting in that room and you had the opportunity to speak your mind to the assembled media in attendance?
I'd say surprise.
Surprise? All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Pat. Jump out of a big cake there and say surprise. Or how about
how you like me now, baby?
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9 Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. Listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
It is becoming clear, ladies and gentlemen, that our next Secretary of Defense could very well be a former general from the Marine Corps. Excuse me, I'm sorry, I forgot. There's no such thing as a former Marine.
They're retired Marines, but never former Marines.
A general in the United States Marine Corps, not just any general, General James Mattis. I'm sorry, let me re-pronounce his name because he has a very important nickname.
That's right.
General James Mad Dog Mattis.
There we go. Who let the dogs out?
Who doesn't want a guy named Mad Dog as their Secretary of Defense,
oh, man,
right?
This guy would be awesome.
So now, listen, I know that he is a Marine, but I don't think he would mind us serenading all of Washington with some of his most memorable quotes to the tune of the Patton theme.
No, that seems perfect. Yeah, yeah.
I know that Patton was an Army guy.
Yeah, that's right.
But our friends at Free Beacon, Washington Free Beacon, assembled back in 2013 when General Mattis retired, assembled a list of his best quotes. And I thought that it would be fitting to let you know who this guy is. So, in that spirit, I come in peace. I didn't bring artillery, but I'm pleading with you with tears in my eyes. If you F with me, I'll kill you all.
There you go.
General James Mad Dog Mattis.
Be polite, be professional, but have a plan to kill everybody you meet.
find the enemy that wants to end this experiment in American democracy and kill every one of them until they're so sick of the killing that they leave us with our freedoms intact.
There
James
you go.
Mad Dog Matt.
You cannot allow any of your people to avoid the brutal facts that if they start living in a dream world, it's going to be bad.
There is nothing better than getting shot at and missed. It's really great.
This is my favorite.
I'm going to plead with you, do not cross us. Because if you do, the survivors will write about what we're going to do here for 10,000 years.
General James Mad Dog Mattis. To his fellow Marines, you are part of the world's most feared and trusted force. Engage your brain before you engage your weapon.
The first time you blow someone away is not an insignificant event. That said, there are just some a-holes in the world that need to be shot.
This guy has got to get the nomination.
We've got to have this guy.
All right, I don't lose any sleep at night over the potential for failure. I can't even spell the word. Actually, he has a theme going with spelling because another one is, Marines don't know how to spell the word defeat.
There you go. Well, this is just this guy's just going to be a barrel of fun. It's going to be so good to have this guy.
The most important 6 inches on the battlefield is between your ears. James Mad Dog Mattis. This is a kind of a long one, but I like this one.
Okay.
If you go into Afghanistan, you got guys who slap women around for 5 years because they didn't wear a veil. You know, guys like that ain't got no manhood left anyway, so it's a hell of a lot of fun to shoot them. Actually, it's quite fun to fight them, you know? It's a hell of a hoot. It's fun to shoot some people. I'll be right up there with you. I like brawling.
Well, and what do you think? Is this guy it? Is he the one?
I sure hope so.
Yeah, because it would be great to have him.
Demonstrate to the world that there's no better friend and no worse enemy than a U.S. Marine.
You got
to
love that.
Well, we shall see. Apparently, this was actually a recommendation from a friend of our program, General Keane.
Is that right?
Fox News.
Jack Keane.
Jack Keane, Fox News analyst, and often comes on here. He had a meeting with Trump, and basically Trump said, and he said, listen, I'm too old for this. I don't need this, you know. He said, well, if not you, who?
Yeah, he said, this guy is a general's general.
He said, Mattis or Petraeus. Either one would be good.
That'd be interesting.
We'd be happy either way. So, General James Mad Dog Mattis, we salute you.
Yeah, we do.
We are ready for you to be our secta.
You've been listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Listen Monday through Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. to hear the show live on 105.9 FM WMAL.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.